Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and killing is my business, but millennials keep killing my business, goddammit. And with me, I have...
I'm Alex, and no, I'm not in a cave. It's just, the wheel there's no dampening in one now.
And we have a special guest joining us here.
Hey, what's going on? It's my name's Chris. I host Metal Revolution on University of Miami's radio station WVUM 90.5 FM.
Howdy ho!
Yeah, fellow metalhead, just like the two of us here. So we've all congregated here together because of what we were actually supposed to do this last weekend, but a bunch of shit got in the way. But it is what it is. So, something interesting came out rather recently. Rolling Stone magazine. They compiled the list together of the 100 greatest metal albums of all time. Now, with metal being as wide and diverse and fantastic a genre as it is, even narrowing it down to just like 100 or so to sort of be like the standard bearers of the genre can be... I imagine it was quite a Herculean task.
Especially, I'm guessing, for an outlet like Rolling Stone, where it's like, you know, they don't really pay that much attention to the genre as it is. So it's like, to see them compiling the greatest metal albums ever was definitely interesting to see the announcement, for sure.
Yeah. I think we'd see a more diverse lineup if, say, Revolver or Metal Hammer did this. But I want to mention two glaring omissions that were not on this list. Ashes of the Wake and The Blackening, two of the best new wave American thrash albums ever.
Oh yeah, the Blackening was definitely sorely missed on this one.
Yeah, to be fair though, I don't think this was like solely like by Rolling Stone's particular staff, because from what I've seen in the credits, they brought in like a bunch of I guess writers and editors from various other metal sites. The only one I recognized like, right off the bat was like Kim Kelly, who I know was the metal editor over at Noisy.
Yeah, and then they've also got Ian Christie, who he owns a publishing company, Bazillion Points Publishing, and he's put out a ton of books related to the genre, but he also is a host on Sirius XM Liquid Metal and hosts Bloody Roots on their station.
Ah, yes.
And his show really focuses hardcore on the real underground shit in the genre. So I'm really happy to see that they consulted with him on this list.
Yeah, that's so you have to get in a lot of people to do something like this. And to be fair, I guess I kind of have to imagine that if you were to make a list like this, obviously Rolling Stone is kind of going to lean a little mainstream in this regard, but I'm sort of taking this on sort of the idea of how well do these 100 albums represent like the various facets of metal. Like we said, it's a huge genre. There's so much to sort through. So how well would these 100 albums sort of, you know, give you more or less the cliff notes of it, for lack of a better term?
You know, honestly, so like I said, you know, Rolling Stone, they never really paid much attention to this genre before, and so to see them putting out a list like this, you know, one can't help but be just a little bit skeptical, but I was actually surprised at how well some of these albums were picked, and I think overall, if someone was just brand new to the genre, like had never listened to a metal album or song ever once in their life, and this was their first introduction, I'd say this is a damn good start for anyone who's curious about the genre, because I think they really do a very good job representing a very good chunk of the different subgenres within heavy metal. The one subgenre, though, I will say that I felt was kind of a little underrepresented would be doom metal. Like, I feel like they could have had a few more good doom metal albums, especially, like, bands like Pentagram, I noticed, was a very glaring omission. You know, albums like Relentless and Be Forewarned, you know, though nothing from them. Trouble's another one that was just completely omitted, which I feel like they should have, Psalm 9 should have at least been included somewhere on the list. But other than that, I think all the other subgenres are pretty fairly well represented.
Absolutely. And so we're going to try and go through this list as efficiently as we can. Just kind of, you know, comment whenever we see fit. Although, if we're starting right from the top at 100, we're not exactly at the best place.
Yeah, we're not starting off with our best foot forward.
Yeah, album 100, Avenged Sevenfold, City of Evil.
I'm not even going to go there.
You know, one of those albums that you probably thought was, like, the coolest thing ever in, like, middle school or maybe even high school if you were delayed on the A7X train, but now it's just kind of, eh.
You know, I went and saw Metallica yesterday over at Hard Rock Stadium, and, like, you know, I had to work. I've been working on a movie set lately, and it's like, I purposefully told them, oh, yeah, I have to leave by, like, 7 or so, because I knew with traffic I would get there right as Avenged Sevenfold was ending, because I just, I can't stand that band. I really can't. I mean, it did hurt to miss Volbeat a little bit, because I do really like that band, but, I mean, they'll be back.
Yeah, they just haven't been the same since the Rev died. I mean, yeah, they had that brief stint with Mike Portnoy, but after that, it's just, it wasn't the same.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because I was a little late sort of getting on the whole Avenged Sevenfold thing or even ever checking out them or this album, but I'm just kind of like, really? You couldn't have picked anything better? Like, as we said, you probably could have nixed this album and you probably couldn't have included, like, you know, as Chris said, any kind of great doom metal release. And, you know, maybe for album 99 as well, this Evanescence album Fallen, which is their debut, I believe.
Yes, and it's great. Fight me, bro.
You know, I'm not gonna shit all over this album, but I feel like this was kind of a puzzling choice, because would you really consider Evanescence really heavy metal? Or I consider them more kind of along the, like, the hard rock spectrum, like, not really as heavy as, you know, metal really is for the most part, I would say.
Well, they've always had a bit of a, I guess you'd say, a gothic tone to an extent, but crafted in a more mainstream style sound, because one of their principal members at the time, Ben Moody, is a professional songwriter. So you have that very tight song structure in the album with the mainstream style sound, and like that, you have a successful mainstream crossover hit. I still hear Bring Me to Life on pop radio stations, and like, what are you doing? This is too heavy for pop radio. Take that off.
Well, I don't really have anything more to say. For me, Evanescence will be nothing more than a meme. I can never consider them an actual band.
You weren't there when they started like I was.
You say so. After that, we have number 98, Sun.
Or that is a very interesting choice. I'm very surprised to see Sun show up on this list. And I'm, you know, while I'm not really, honestly, I'm not really that big into Sun, I'm still very happy to see them representing the kind of doom drone side of the heavy metal spectrum, especially. And they definitely do have their metal credits too, considering they've been bringing Attila from Mayhem on tours to do vocals with him, and they've been had him on recordings in the past. So to see Sun in any capacity on this list is actually pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've listened to this album, Monoliths and Dimensions, but from what I remember, it was, as far as like doom and drone, a pretty killer record, all things considered. And since they're arguably probably like one of the bigger names in the genre currently, if they wanted something more, like, you know, 21st century to represent that style, yeah, it's a good choice.
Oh, it's an absolutely perfect choice, I think.
Then, another one that I'd say is a pretty good choice, 97, Gojira, From Mars to Sirius.
Definitely a very good choice, because, you know, I feel like Gojira, they're one of the few extreme bands, kind of like Cannibal Corpse, in a way where it's like, you know, they did it. They managed to break through. And it's like now, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I went to Metallica. They're on tour. Gojira was opening a whole string of dates on that tour. And it's like, if Metallica's
I was on that tour. I was at that tour here in Charlotte when they had Gojira and Lamb of God. They were both killer.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, if you have a band, especially if you're an extreme metal band, if you have someone like Metallica saying, hey, guys, come out on the road with us, you know you're doing something right. And so, you know, while I've never really been a big listener of Gojira before, I have heard a few songs. I've played them on the radio before. They're definitely a very solid act. And to see them, I mean, yeah, it's kind of lame to see them so far down on the list at 97. But to see them on this list at all, it definitely feels good to see them here.
And it just reminds me how great they were before they decided that releasing Magma was a good idea. Anyway, number 96, and I always pronounce this name wrong, I'm pretty sure. Is the starting case Silence or not?
Probably.
Kveller Talks 2013 release, Mayor?
I think it's pronounced Veritak.
I'm not good with foreign languages.
It's pronounced un-American, that's how it's pronounced.
America! Yeah, anyone have any thoughts on that, or...?
Honestly, I don't, because I've never really listened to that band before, but I mean, I know they're popular in some capacity, so I mean, this is the kind of choice that I think really makes sense for Rolling Stone. Like, I feel like if any Rolling Stone editors contributed to this list, this was probably one of those albums that kind of snuck through onto the final list.
I can see that. Now, for the next one on the list, number 95, Dream Theater, Images and Words.
Yeah.
I'll let the prog man chime in.
Alex is the Dream Theater guy. We'll let him have his moment.
Yeah, now, before I go and gush all over this album, I have to say, this is an interesting choice because I figured Metropolis Part 2, that is such a ground-shattering album for them. But, yeah, Images and Words did lay down the original work for Dream Theater and their ventures and successes. But just imagine the landscape when this album came out. It was 1992, and grunge was king. So you have these songs that go, you know, 8, 9, 10 minute long. There's all these intricate guitar solos and keyboard stuff and really versatile vocal approaches and work. It's an enigma of an album by 1992 standards, but it certainly has aged significantly well. So, yeah. Some prog metal representation in this list. I like it.
Yeah, this is one of those albums of theirs, because I'll admit, I'm kind of blanking on like half of Dream Theater discography, and I know this is one of them, because I literally only know the song Pull Me Under, which to this day, is it fair to say this is still like, that's Dream Theater's biggest like commercial hit?
It's their only hit, as noted by their compilation album, Greatest Hit, and 21 other pretty cool songs. Mike Portnoy has a great sense of humor.
That's awesome right there.
That kind of reminds me of when Typo Negative released a compilation album right after World Coming Down, and they labeled it Least Worst of Typo Negative.
Gotta love when metal bands have a sense of humor.
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. I mean, you can't be all doom and gloom and grim and scary 100% of the time, because then, you know, people, assholes like me, are going to make fun of you.
Or you could be like Dream Theater and then put some Morse code into one of your songs. You will now eat my ass and balls.
Okay, then. I'll have to keep out for that when I'm going through their album.
It's called In the Name of God off of Train of Thought, which is actually their heaviest album.
I'll keep that in mind. Number 94, and yeah, I'm guessing this was probably from the noisy crowd, fucking Deaf Heaven Sunbather.
Oh yeah, this choice just absolutely reeks of noisy, and I kind of expected this one to show up at some point in this list, and while I don't like this album or this band at all, it definitely did its job in kind of like not only really stirring the metal community and causing debate, actual debating and conversation, but I'm pretty sure it also kind of really pulled a whole new crowd into this whole thing we call black metal. Because I mean, like, yeah, you've got the poppy sounding music, but you've got these extreme black metal shrieks over it, and it's like, you know, someone curious about that, it's like hearing the term black metal thrown around, they're probably going to put it into Google, and that's how they're probably going to learn about bands like Mayhem and Dark Throne and Bathory, and, you know, nature will take its course from there.
Yeah, I suppose. Although, I gotta be honest, like, I've tried listening to Def Heaven, I've tried listening to this album, I even tried listening to the last one that came out with New Bermuda, and I just don't get the appeal. Like, if I want shoegaze-influenced black metal, I'll just listen to Sandhat. This is just... No. Moving on, I can't dwell on this. 93, White Zombie, La Sexorcisto, Devil Music, Volume 1.
I fully endorse this inclusion in the list, because I personally love Rob Zombie and most of everything he's ever done, so...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. White Zombie, killer. Fucking killer.
Yeah, this is one of those classic metal albums that, like, it's kind of in the shock rock vein of, like, I'd almost say, like, Marilyn Manson, but, like, kind of different, because this one, if you ever listen to, you know, the classics like Thunderkiss 65 or, God, what was the other big single off this album?
Black Sunshine.
The best song
Dude,
off Guitar Hero
that
3.
Song is so badass. Like, I don't care what anyone says about Zombie. The Black Sunshine is awesome.
Yeah, that's just a killer, just, like, really fun. Like, if you need, like, a metal jam to just, like, get you psyched and in the mood, that'll do it for you. It's just, you know, a good old spooky fun time.
Especially, it's like, you know, you hear the car engine start at the beginning, and then that sick bass line comes in, and it's like, yeah. And then I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it Iggy Pop doing the voiceovers in the beginning and end of the song?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, that's just another layer of awesomeness to this already great album, so.
And there's apparently a sample in the song from the 1965 movie Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, which has been a recurring theme of this album. A lot of old movie samples, and even in the opening track, because I'm reading off Wikipedia, samples from the anime Urotsuki Doji, Legend of the Overfiend.
That's a hentai, isn't it?
Yeah, one of the first and one of the more infamous.
That honestly doesn't surprise me, considering this is a zombie album, because, you know, he's all about the obscure exploitation shit, so, like,
yeah.
Hearing that he had, because I never knew that, like, I'm pretty sure I heard somewhere along the way he had the Faster Pussycat samples in the album, but to hear that
There's also some samples from the original Dawn of the Dead, the 1932 Mummy film, some movie called High School Confidential. There's just a lot of samples everywhere, and there's a bit of a theme with his music, or for White Zombie's music, and it enhances the song. It gives that extra spooky, spoopy feeling.
Don't get spoofed! Anyway, number 92, I Hate God, Take As Needed for Pain.
I am so all about this choice. I'm so happy to see I Hate God as one of the few doomed sludge acts representing the genre on this list, and I would honestly say that that's probably my favorite album from them too. That or Dope Sick. Like, to see, like, either one of those two at somewhere on this list just tickles me inside so much. I love that they actually paid attention to I Hate God on this list.
Well, yeah, it's kind of almost inarguable that they're one of, like, the foundational acts of the genre, or at least one of the more important ones.
I would absolutely say they're one of the foundational acts, for sure, because, I mean, like, you know, obviously doom metal has pretty much been a thing pretty much since the very inception of the genre with Black Sabbath, but it's like, you know, I Hate God just took it to just so much more disgusting levels, you know, especially, I mean, look at that album artwork. I mean, like, it's just so disturbing looking. It's like you've got the photograph of the naked model with the flowers on her head right in the center, but you've got these just weird pictures surrounding her. Like, you've got a picture of, like, dentures and, like, prosthetic arm, and it's like, you know, it's just, it creates an all-around disturbing, like, aura around it, and it's just so cool. And and you know, Mike's vocals, and, you know, it's cool to see Mike is recovered from his health issues. He's getting back out there. I know I Hate God's playing Maryland Death Fest next year. They're one of the first bands announced, and it's like his vocals are just so like, they get under your skin, you know?
Absolutely. Number 91, this is one I can't say I've ever heard of, Naked City Torture Garden. Anyone familiar with this one, or?
No. I'm not, but I remember reading through this one and spotting how it was kind of like, yeah, I see, like, jazz being thrown around, which kind of threw me off. It's like, why are they, if it's more jazzy, why are they including it in this? But then I saw them talking about how he kind of fuses the jazz with grindcore and extreme metal, and it's like, oh, I actually kind of want to check this out now. And because I'm a dirty procrastinator, I haven't checked it out yet. But,
You're a procrastinator. I spent 5 years procrastinating on reorganizing my bedroom, and all it took was some recarpeting to get that all done, taken care of.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting one. Speaking of interesting, number 90, Body Count Self-Titled.
Hell yes.
Yeah. God damn. I actually only listened to this album, like, relatively recently. Almost kind of, like, to prepare for this list, and I'm surprised I didn't, because, yeah, this is a pretty solid collection of just really, like, fun and oftentimes funny just like rap rock tunes. Especially if there's one song you ever need to hear from this album, listen to the song KKK Bitch.
Mm-hmm.
All about Ice-T falling in love with a fine ass white girl whose dad turns out to be a grand dragon for the Klan.
That is just wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an album I never thought I would see on this list. I actually never would have even considered it for this list, to be honest, but when I saw it on this list, it just made so much sense. It's like, you know, you really can't do this one without shining the spotlight on this one at some point, and so I'm glad to see Body Count thrown in on this one.
And any album that can piss off the president of the U.S. is fine by me.
Ah, good times. Now, number 89, Nightwish with Once. Now, again, if you're going kind of, like, really prominent with your list, obviously Nightwish would be one of those, and I can't say I disagree. I mean, I remember hearing someone once say somewhere that metal is the most cinematic of all music genres, and so when you're getting into the symphonic stuff, which I kind of have a soft spot for, I was a band geek, after all, for, like, 7 years, that's just kind of taking that base notion to sort of its most logical extreme. And Nightwish are obviously arguably the biggest purveyors of that. And
oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't like them at all, like, at all. But, I mean, even I can say, you know, yeah, you can't really make this top 100 list without paying at least a little bit of attention to Nightwish. I mean, I don't like it, I don't support it, but you kind of have to for a list like this, so I'll trust their judgment on picking this album to represent Nightwish in the top 100 best heavy metal albums of all time list.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite. I just kind of, like, really love this stuff, to the point where I've even seen Nightwish live once with my best friend. She and I are both big fans, so
yeah. Was that one of the times they hit Revolution Live?
Yeah, that was about, I want to say, 4 years ago? 3 or 4, I believe.
2012 in October.
That might have been it, yeah.
Oh, man. I remember that show. I remember it because that was this exact same night that Death Angel was at Churchill's playing the Ultra Violence in its entirety. Yeah.
Very nice. Now, another one that I'm really hyped for to see here, number 88, Pig Destroyer's Terrifier.
Oh, God, hell fucking yes. I am so happy to see Pig Destroyer on this list.
Me too. Now, obviously, there's a lot of grindcore bands that you could pick from here and there that would probably be fine, but I really love Pig Destroyer because there was always something sort of different about them. Like, the way they wrote their songs and the way they were produced, that sort of made them stand out from, like, the just constant gravity-blasting brick wall of noise, like, style of grindcore from bands like Rotten Sound and whatnot. Like, Pig Destroyer's production was always just, like, a little bit crunchier. The songwriting had more sort of breathing room with, like, more groove metal digressions here and there, and even a breakdown or two. It was just enough to set them apart, and they've been pretty consistently excellent since then, so Terrifier, good choice.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, I personally probably would have gone with something like Book Burner, because that's my personal favorite from Pig Destroyer. But, I mean, I will gladly take Terrifier in its place, because that, I mean, anything that Scott Hall does, I will always consider just absolutely fantastic. I mean, he's, in my opinion, one of the best guitarists in the grindcore genre. I mean, he's practically the showrunner for Agoraphobic Nosebleed as well. And, I mean, like, yeah, and I will listen to anything Scott Hall does. And, I mean, their vocalist, I forget what his name is, their vocalist, but he writes all the lyrics for the songs. And it's like he's just got this very weird but very dark poetic tinge to his lyrics. And it's just, it like I Hate God, it really creates a very disturbing atmosphere around the band. So very stoked to see Pig Destroyer on this list for sure.
Now, could we just get a new album already? It's been like 5 fucking years, please.
Yeah, right. Well, actually, you know, I'm friends with their new bass player, John Jarvis, who's also an Agoraphobic Nosebleed, and he says that they're working on it and hopefully gonna try to have it out probably by the end of this year, maybe early next year. But new Pig Destroyer is in the works for sure.
Woo!
You know what needs to happen again is they need to play Miami again, because that was one hell of a time right there.
I'm trying to remember, because I know at my current band's practice space, there is a poster from when they played Churchill's. I forget how long ago that might have been.
That was in December 2012. It was Pig Destroyer with Maruda, Implosive Discord. And that was one of Maruda's comeback shows, too, so that was a big deal. Implosive Disgorgence played the show. This band Preopis from North Carolina played the show. I feel like there was one other band on the show, but I can't think of what they were called. But that was just one of the most violent shows I've ever been in, was being right up front for Pig Destroyer at Churchill's.
Yeah, so hopefully they get down here sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Number 87, Manowar, Hail to England.
Oh, man. I am just so all about this pick here. Like, Manowar is excellent. I mean, it is total dumb, cheesy fun. Like, honestly, Manowar is the heavy metal music equivalent to watching a Michael Bay film. It's stupid, it's cheesy, but you can't look away because it's flashy at the same time and it's catchy.
Well, Manowar has been one of those big blind spots in my metal catalog, so I really got to make a point of it to get around to their shit soon. And now for number 86, Lamb of God, As the Palaces Burn.
I'll take it, I guess.
Like, Ashes of the Wake is such a fucking killer album. Like, those first four tracks alone are four of the best tracks Lamb of God ever made. But, I mean, sure, fine, okay. I mean, it's good to know that there's at least some Devin Townsend presence in this list, which, by the way, how did City not make the cut? That's like, why?
I know, that's like the best album.
Yeah.
Just period. But, I mean, I'm happy with seeing Lamb of God here. I know they're one of those bands that sometimes get a lot of flack because they just sort of sound like they're releasing the same album over and over, but you know, there are plenty of bands that can get away with doing that just because the songs are generally really good. Although, personally speaking, I probably would have chose Sacrament just because that has, you know, Redneck and probably, and my personal favorite Lamb of God song, the opener, Walk With Me In Hell.
Oh, God, yes. That's actually kind of really surprising now that they didn't take that one over this one.
Yeah,
it is what it is, though. Number 85.
This is a big one for me.
Dark Throne, Transylvanian Hunger.
Our first real, true, 100% black metal entry on the list, and it's fucking Dark Throne. Hell yes. I mean, Transylvanian Hunger. Like, so Dark Throne, they started off as a death metal band and released one of my favorite European death metal albums of all time. They released Soulside Journey. But then afterwards, they had that stylistic change where they shifted more in the direction of bands like Mayhem and Burzum, the going more in the black metal region, and they put out this whole string of albums as a black metal band. Honestly, Transylvanian Hunger isn't the one I would have picked. I would have picked the first one they put out as a black metal band, Ablaze in the Northern Sky. But then again, that's just the fanboy in me, because Transylvanian Hunger, I mean, I'll even admit, is probably, arguably, the one that really kind of put them on the map as one of the big Norwegian black metal bands. And so, yeah, definitely glad to see Dark Throne in this list.
Excellent. And here's an excellent choice in my own opinion. Number 84, High on Fire, Blessed Black Wings. Funny thing about this album, I actually came across it like completely on a whim. Like, I was just browsing the record store that's like near my house, the metal section, and just looking for something to buy. And I saw this album cover just with like the like big goblin wings just stretched out. I was like, what's this? Oh, it looks cool. Maybe I'll buy it. And I was listening to the car, and I was just kind of, like, really floored by this, by just how meaty and low-end the guitars were, the just loud aggressiveness of Matt Pike's own, like, vocal style, and just the production in general, which kind of had this very live aesthetic to it. It's just, and this is more or less my introduction to sort of, like, sludge and even stoner metal, because remember, Matt Pike was also in Sleep, who we'll get to later on here. And yeah, it's just, this album and this band in general just like hits so hard and aggressive. It's just good. It's a good album, and if you haven't heard it, you should.
You know, this is one band that I kept seeing their name everywhere, and you know, I'd kind of heard rumblings about Pike and his past with Sleep, but I never really gave a shit about them, and it really took seeing them live to really sell me on them. I remember they played at Grand Central like 3 years ago with Death Angel and Thrasher Die and Orb Weaver and Solstice. And that's what did it for me, is when I saw them live, I was just completely blown away. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. Why have I never listened to this band before? And so, yeah. Definitely good to see Matt Pike and company on this list at some point.
Now for number 83, Baroness the Red Album. Technically I'm the more contemporaneous eclectic weirdo here, so I theoretically should like Baroness, but for whatever reason, I just can't. There's something really corny about the way their music always sounds to me. Like, they just kind of always sounded like the poor man's Mastodon.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're not terrible or anything. It's okay. The Red Album in particular is perfectly serviceable, but it's just kind of a, I don't know, just a nothing album to me. And to be honest, I guess this is, again, like sort of the noisy mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, noisy slash pitchfork, let's say, just kind of creeping in here, putting this on here, because I can't imagine anyone other than that crowd just loving Baroness.
I can honestly kind of see, like, the Rolling Stone editor crowd, you know, kind of going to that type of name when thinking of the heavy metal genre. Because, you know, they are kind of one of those more popular radio rock-ish names. So that kind of makes sense, too, like, with the whole noisy pitchfork crowd, but I think that one's also kind of one of those that would come up in conversation in the offices at Rolling Stone.
Fair enough, but I suppose.
The one that I'm really stoked on is 82, because I never thought I would ever see Rolling Stone ever utter this band's name ever once.
Never say never.
Care to say what it is, sir?
Yes, it is Entombed, Left Hand Path, and I am so incredibly happy to see them pick this one to as the first kind of real tried and true death metal album on the list.
Yeah, Entombed's been one of those names that's been on my radar for a while. Like I said, I have a big backlog I gotta get to at some point. So I guess this is one of those ones where I absolutely should.
Honestly, with Entombed, personally, I don't go past the second album, Clandestine. Like, because, you know, Left Hand Path is one of the greatest death metal albums of all time, easily, hands down. Clandestine hits just as hard as Left Hand Path, but starting with their third album, Wolverine Blues, is kind of when they went in a different direction. They started kind of, they're kind of one of the pioneering bands in the whole death and roll movement, you know, kind of like how Midnight does the whole black and roll Venom type thing. Entombed started acquiring more traditional rock and roll elements in their music. And I feel like, you know, a band like Midnight can pull off the whole black metal rock and roll fusion so perfectly because, you know, we have bands like that in the past that are just so incredibly influential, like Venom and Motorhead and Old Bathory. But with Entombed, though, I just don't feel like the rock and roll elements really meld together with the death metal elements. And I know there's been a lot of infighting between older members of Entombed. Like, right now, there's two versions of Entombed out right now. There's the recently reactivated Entombed, but there's also the more well-known Entombed AD. And that one is the only original member of Entombed in this band is LG Petrov, the original vocalist from Entombed. And meanwhile, you have the just straight up Entombed, and it's with Nick Anderson, Alex Helid, and Ulf Cederlund. And they're going around now with a new guitarist and vocalist performing as Entombed. But I know that for a long time there was a big battle over the name. And honestly, I go with Entombed because they're trying to get back to that Left Hand Path sound, whereas Entombed AD is going soldiering on with the death and roll sound. So, but Left Hand Path, though, I mean, regardless, still such an incredible album. So happy to see it here. And especially the next one on the list, if I can say this one as well, is probably one of my favorite picks on this whole list.
Go right on ahead.
It's 81, and it's Bathory Under the Sign of the Black Mark, another legendary Swedish band, probably one of the most influential bands in heavy metal, I would honestly say, because back in the early 80s, you know, you had new wave of British heavy metal with bands like Saxon and Maiden and whatnot. And of course, those bands went on to influence bands like Metallica and Exodus. So there you have thrash metal. But at the same time, you know, in Sweden, Korthon was taking notes from bands like Venom and from bands like Motorhead and kind of just taking it to that next level the same way I would say James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich took what the British were doing to the next extreme level. And Bathory started up, they put out their self-titled, and it's considered by many to be the first real black metal album. And I feel, and you know, that Bathory's a band that really kind of evolved over their course of their run. And I feel like Under the Sign of the Black Mark is, you know, like really the first true black metal album, because that is where everything was just set in stone. It's like, you know, you have the weird riffing going on, but kind of simplistic riffing. Korthon's vocals are just shrieking all over the place. You have the intense drumming going on, and especially this album was way tighter in its performance than the self-titled and the return were. Those albums, while absolutely awesome and super influential in black metal, were still kind of sloppy. Like, you know, the first album, the self-titled, is off time all over the place. And Under the Sign of the Black Mark, I feel like, is where Bathory really kind of honed their craft. And it's like, all right, this is what we're going to do. Let's do it. And they put out one of the most unrelenting albums at that time, and definitely one of the most influential, I would say, because I mean, this is what Mayhem was listening to, this is what Burzum was listening to, this is what Emperor, Darkthrone, all these bands were listening to Bathory. And so to see Under the Sign of the Black Mark on a Rolling Stone list of the best metal albums ever is just so great.
Yeah, that is always how I've understood Bathory's reputation, but I didn't realize like how far back that influence actually went.
Oh yeah, Bathory, I would say, is probably one of the most influential in heavy metal because of how big of an impact they made on extreme metal and black metal.
Now, at number 80, we have an entry from Ministry, Psalm 69, The Way to Succeed and the Way to Suck Eggs. Isn't that a glorious title?
Yeah.
What, you got something against Ministry, Alex?
No. It's just, I don't know. It's just this time period where there was a big rise in industrial-style metal, you know, like Power Man 5000, it's just... I don't know, maybe I just wasn't in the right mindset going into these bands, but I just never got into this kind of metal. Like, it's just
Yeah, me too. Yeah, industrial metal's always been, I've always been really picky with that. Like, when it comes to industrial metal, the only band I've actually really, truly enjoyed is Godflesh, who we'll definitely get to later on in the list. But Ministry was kind of a band that never really clicked with me. I know, like, a buddy of mine requested I play, back when the Rockefeller dude or whatever finally passed away, a buddy of mine requested New World Order from Ministry. I think it might have even been off of this album. I'm not 100%
sure.
Yeah,
it was the opening track.
Okay, yeah. He requested that track on the radio when this guy died, and it's like, it's a request is a request, so okay, I'll go ahead and play it. And it just didn't really do anything for me. I don't know. I mean, it's cool they had Mike from Rigor Mortis playing guitar on and off with them here and there, but Ministry never really did much for me, to be honest.
So it's from what I can gather, it sounds like I'm the only person here who actually does like Ministry, at least more than anyone else. Like, I mean, heck, I've even seen Ministry live once before. It was like a few years ago, I believe. But yeah, personally speaking, maybe not this album. If I was going to pick a Ministry release, I'd probably lean more either The Land of Rape and Honey, which is when they actually shifted from their new wave origins to this more savage industrial sound, or maybe even The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste, because that one has some, like, pretty killer industrial jams on it, especially that album Opener Thieves. But, you know, Psalm 69, not necessarily a bad choice, though. Again, like I said, I probably would have preferred one of those previous two ones. But anyway, moving on to another arguably important album of the genre, number 79, At the Gates, Slaughter of the Soul.
I definitely say this one is incredibly important because, I mean, this is arguably one of the big, if not the biggest, jumping off point for what would become metalcore later on in the late 90s and early 2000s, with bands like Lamb of God, Killswitch Engage. Definitely big influence on the new wave of American heavy metal. So
yeah, you can definitely like feel sort of that influence, especially on tracks like Blinded by Fear.
Oh yes.
And yeah. Others. In addition to also just being what's often considered one of like sort of the quintessential beginning points for what would become like the Gothenburg metal sound.
Oh yeah, you know,
that whole melodic death metal thing alongside like Dark Tranquillity and In Flames.
Yeah, definitely, so, definitely, yeah. For sure.
Excellent release. Obviously, a good place to have it here. Number 78, and this is an interesting one: Dimension Hatross by Voivod.
Definitely interesting for sure.
Yeah, they're one of those like really early origin points for progressive metal, and I think this was kind of around the point where they like really started pushing in that more experimental direction. Although, personally, the only Voivod album I could say I absolutely love would be Nothing Face.
I kind of go in the complete opposite direction. The one that really does it for me is the one that came right before Dimension, and that's Killing Technology. That one and the one before it, Roar. But then again, at the same time, you know me, I tend to go more towards the thrashier metal punk shit anyway. So, but this Dimension, though, I, you know, while it's definitely an interesting choice, I honestly think it is probably the best choice when it comes to Voivod, because like you said, they were so influential on progressive metal. And this, I think, is really the best album to represent that one key point in their career where it was a perfect mix of the, you know, they still got the thrash songs going, album, the thrash sound going on, you know, Psychic Vacuum and Tribal Convictions, but at the same time they're starting to introduce the weirder, proggier shit into their sound. They don't beat you over the head with it though, so it kind of really melds well with the thrash sound. And so I think Dimension is definitely the Voivod album to pick for a list like this, because it represents the best of both sides of Voivod.
Interesting argument there. And speaking of albums that kind of meld thrash and prog together, number 77, Meshuggah, Destroy, Erase, Improve. Their second ever release.
I'll leave you guys to discuss this one. I honestly can't do Meshuggah. I've tried in the past, but I can't get into it.
You just broke his heart.
I know, I'm sorry, but I honestly tried, but I just can't.
Well, obviously, Meshuggah's been a band that's always appealed to me ever since I first heard, I think it was either Obscene or Koloss in high school, because obviously I'm a pretentious cunt and everything. But yeah, Destroy, Erase, Improve, yeah, their second album, but this is definitely the first where they kind of started to adopt like that gents sound. I mean, they were still very much like using that thrash sound from their debut, Contradictions Collapse, but this is where you sort of, you still hear the thrash, but you also get a lot of that really jittery, off-kilter stop-start momentum in the drums and the guitar riffs that would eventually, you know, pretty much form the basis of the gent genre, which would then be pushed even further on Chaosphere when, you know, things started to get just a little bit groovier. So if we were to talk the point where gent more or less started to take its initial root form, then yeah, definitely Destroy, Erase, Improve.
Yeah, no, you know, while I said I really can't get into this band, they're definitely one of these bands where I absolutely will not deny how influential they were in their form of music, for sure.
And number 76, Twisted Sisters, Stay Hungry.
All right, I'll take it. I mean, I don't dislike Twisted Sister, but I mean, I'm not a huge fan, but I don't hate them. So, all right, fine, whatever.
I will say it gets a point for being on here for having the song Burn in Hell, which was, of course, used in the greatest movie ever made, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
And you know, honestly, thinking more about it, you know, I am happy to see Twisted Sister in this one, mainly because, not so much for the music, but for Dee Snider himself, because this, you gotta remember, this is an album that was released by a band at a time where the PMRC was starting to really take hold in Washington. Tipper Gore and the whole censorship on music. And Dee Snider got up in front of Congress and argued in favor of heavy metal. So, you know what? I'll give him an entry on this list for sure, for sticking up for his genre like that in front of the big wigs in Washington 30-something years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this next one, though, is another big one for me. Can I say this one?
Go ahead.
Morbid Angel Covenant at 75. This is another one I'm really, really happy to see on here, because Morbid Angel is just, honestly, I would say probably one of the most influential bands in extreme metal. Like, personally, I probably wouldn't have gone with Covenant. I probably would have gone with Altars of Madness instead, which is their big debut on Earache Records from 89. That was the big one that's like, whoa, what the fuck am I listening to, you know? With opening with Immortal Rites, and you hear Trey Azigthoth's just weird riffing all over the place, and you hear David Vincent's vocals, Pete Sandoval on the drums, and it's just like a total maze work of just total extreme blasphemy and horror, images of horror. And, you know, they continued that on Blessed Are the Sick in 91. But then Covenant, you know, I can see why they would include Covenant on this list, because this was their big, big label debut. I forget, I think it was Columbia Records distributed this one and really kind of blew Morbid Angel into the stratosphere. Like, I think on this tour, I think they actually... I remember hearing about this from the Hibernus Mortis dudes, because they were at this show, and I always thought this was the weirdest lineup. It was Morbid Angel as the opening act, with Motorhead as direct support, and the headliner was Black Sabbath with Tony Martin. So it's like Covenant was the album they were supporting on that tour. So, you know, I can see why they would choose Covenant over Altars, but... yeah, it's still very cool to see Morbid Angel on this list nonetheless.
All Morbid Angel is good. Okay, 99% of Morbid
Angel.
Yeah, Angels
I wouldn't
Angel.
Say all.
There's the one we don't speak of.
There's that still that I record that's pretty terrible.
Coming in at number 74, we have Venom with Welcome to Hell.
Oh my god, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Another one just like Bathory's self-titled, that was just such a key turning point for extreme metal because of the satanic imagery, and just, you know, Venom had this presence to him, this mystique where it's like all Satan and hell, and it's like, man, am I going to be in trouble with the big guy upstairs if I'm listening to this album? Like, you know, they kind of had that dangerous vibe to them. And, you know, I remember hearing an interview with Kronos a long time ago the interview was a long time ago. I heard the interview a few years ago, but he was talking about how one of their big influences was Kiss. And, you know, Gene Simmons in that band is the demon. And I remember hearing Kronos talk about how, you know, we looked up to Gene Simmons, he's the demon, but then, you know, he starts singing songs about love and sex and whatnot, and it's like, you know, you're not the demon anymore, we're gonna be the demon. And then they put Welcome to Hell out and just blew the doors open to what you could do with heavy metal at that time.
Number 73, Scorpions, Blackout.
You know, it's funny, I'm actually wearing my Scorpions Blackout baseball tee right now.
Yeah, the Scorpions have always been one of those, I guess you could say, pioneer bands, alongside, you know, bands like Black Sabbath, that sort of paved the way into early metal, and, you know, sort of progressed on and on and on. And can you believe these guys are still around as a touring band 52 years after they were formed?
That is just absolutely incredible to think about. And, you know, I'm really happy to see that they picked this album out of all the amazing albums they could have picked from the Scorpions. They happened to pick this one. And this one's easily my favorite of all of them. So, yeah. I mean, my only complaint would be I wish this was a little further up on the list.
And now at number 72, we have one of the most influential bands in the post-metal genre. And that is, of course, those Filthy Terrorists in ISIS. With their release, Oceanic, their second album overall, in fact. Now, ISIS is one of those bands that, like, I know they're important, but I can't click with them all that much. But to a certain extent, I can sort of see the appeal and why someone would want to, you know, be into them. Because they do have some very dynamic, interesting, like, compositions. And especially if you ever pay attention to the way, like, they write their lyrics, there's usually, like, these deep... narrative concepts that are sort of like, they're easy to grasp, but at the same time there's a lot of like depth to them. And yeah, ISIS is just one of those things I guess I need to try harder to, I guess, get into if I can.
You know, can I be honest, I've never been able to understand what exactly post-metal is. Like, can someone please explain to me what post-metal is? I've always wondered what exactly that is supposed to even mean.
The best answer I have is that it's supposed to be a more somber, emotionally melancholic kind of, I guess, metal. I don't know. Like, I'm generally bad with describing subgenres, but post-metal in particular, I'm kind of just at a loss for words for it. If I ever get a good answer, I'll get back to you on that. Let's stick a pin in that. And here's an interesting one. Number 71, Living Colors Vivid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely another interesting one. I think interesting mainly because I kind of see this entry. This is just me personally, but I kind of see this entry in the same vein that I saw Evanescence a while back, where it's like, you know, can you really call Living Color heavy metal, or is that more on the hard rock spectrum?
I guess we just sort of
call it funk metal.
Yeah, it that makes sense.
In the middle. I mean, well, let's be honest. Vernon Reid, he certainly shreds like he's a metal guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty.
Especially that just ever so classic of classics, Cult of Personality. A favorite of mine ever since I first heard on the soundtrack to Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
And
of trust course, me, playing that game, I never took it off Radio X when playing.
And of course, Guitar Hero 3.
Oh, yeah. But this next one, though, in the list really has me stoked.
Number 70, Death Human.
This is honestly, personally, this is where I stop with death. Like, I mean, I love death, but after this album, I feel like it just became a little too technical for my tastes. But, I mean, Human is just so monumental. Like, it's absolutely crushingly heavy and brutal, but at the same time, you know, you've got Chuck Schuldiner's super intricate guitar playing, and just it's a total shred fest the whole way through, especially since they got Sean and Paul from Cynic backing him now. I feel like this is really a perfect storm of a lineup. You know, you have Chuck Schuldiner fronting the band, then you've got Cynic as his rhythm section, and then you've got fucking Steve DiGiorgio on bass. So it's like, damn, dude.
Yeah, for me, I'm surprised they only managed to settle on, like, one death album for, like, this entire list. Because for me, like, of all death albums I've heard, and I have heard quite a bit, I just haven't heard their last two, I believe. All death is good death, although I'm kind of surprised you say you stop at Human, because personally, if I were to pick a death album, I guess the one that I always, like, love to pieces would be Individual Thought Patterns, the one that came right after. Then again, that's just me being a colossal slut for anything that Gene Hoglan is on.
Well, you know, I kind of got to go back and revisit that album, but honestly, like, you know, the death kind of started to bore me a little bit after Human. But, I mean, like you said, all death is good death, absolutely. There's still excellent, excellent tracks on every single album they've ever put out. But, like you said, though, I'm also kind of surprised they only settled on one album from them, because Human, obviously, was such a huge turning point for death metal because of how technical it was. You know, it really was kind of one of the jumping-off points for tech death. But at the same time, I could also argue Scream Bloody Gore or Leprosy kind of deserves a spot on this list as well because of, you know what, I'll say Scream Bloody Gore, not just because of how monumental and perfect sounding it is for what it is exactly 30 years later, because it was released 30 years ago this year, but I mean, like, that was one of those albums where it's like Seven Churches by Possessed or Morbid Angel, Altars of Madness or Autopsy, Severed Survival, where it's like, when the world first heard Scream Bloody Gore, it's just like, holy shit, what are we listening to? It's like, this is a whole new breed of music we're listening to. And so I would have liked to have seen them include maybe one of the earlier death albums on this list as well, but considering that they only picked one, I'm glad they went with Human, because I feel like Human is really the best of both worlds, because death really, in my eyes, is two bands. You have the straight, raw, old-school death metal band that put out Scream Bloody Gore, Leprosy, and Spiritual Healing, and then you have the more technical, intricate band that released Individual Thought Patterns, Symbolic, and The Sound of Perseverance. And I feel like Human is really the one point in death's career where Chuck Schuldiner managed to really put both worlds together just so perfectly. It's absolutely brutal and relentless, like the first few albums, but it's a total technical shred fest, like the last few albums. So definitely hats off to Rolling Stone for picking this as the one death album on the list, and one of the only death metal albums in general on the list. We've already mentioned this is the third one we've got to. We also talked earlier about Left Hand Path and At the Gates, mm-hmm. but they only have two more death metal albums on this list, so to see that Human is one of the few they picked, I think is a very, very good choice.
Very well said, sir. And now for the requisite nice, number 69, Soundgarden, Louder Than Love, which, interesting as far as Soundgarden's discography. This is, like, I think either their first or their second.
Their first major label album, I think.
Yeah, this is, I don't even think this is one of, like, their super huge ones. Like, this was definitely before.
Their second album, actually. But yeah, I think it's their first major label. Their first major label album.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised that they kind of, like, picked this one. Because to be completely honest, okay, I get that in general, as far as, like, the Seattle grunge scene, generally Alice in Chains and Soundgarden are viewed as the most metal-influenced of all those groups.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, if they were going to pick a Soundgarden, I'm surprised they didn't go with Bad Motor Finger.
I know, right?
Which is like the last
What's the one right after that one, too?
Super Unknown.
Yeah, that's another one where it's like, you know, I'm kind of surprised they went with this one over those. I mean, I don't...
Super Unknown swayed more toward the grunge side of things, not so much the metal side.
Yeah, true, I guess. I mean, truth be told, I don't really know that much about Soundgarden, to be honest. But, I mean, those are albums that I know I hear from fucking everyone who talks about this band, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah, but, mm-hmm. again, like, I guess I could see why they wouldn't do Super Unknown, because that, again, was leaning more towards grunge. They were kind of, I guess, shedding the sort of metal-ish nature of their previous albums. But again, with the just excellent, just heavy-hitting, you know, songs like classics like Rusty Cage and Jesus Christ Pose, or like Face Pollution, I'm surprised they skipped this one, because this was like the last really metal Soundgarden album, and this is when they were like really pushing into those more experimental bounds. And speaking of surprise picks from certain artists, number 68... Marilyn Manson, Portrait of an American Family. So not Antichrist Superstar, which is the one that more people would know or care about, that definitely pushed him into further into the spotlight as the definitive 90s shock rocker, but his very first major debut. I'm kind of surprised. Okay, to be honest, I mean, I was listening to Portrait of an American Family earlier. It's okay. I mean, the thing that I think kind of gets me about it is that none of the songs really ever hit as hard as, like, future Marilyn Manson albums. Like, okay, the whole of Portrait of an American Family, in terms of heaviness, sort of pales in comparison to just, hell, the opening track of Antichrist Superstar, Irresponsible Hate Anthem. So, again, this is such, like, a weird one where you're like, why this one? Like, there was another one right there you could have chosen if you were going to put Manson, but instead you go here? I don't know. I'm just kind of like question marks right now. Number 67, another interesting one. An album I've always enjoyed, Queensryche's Operation Mindcrime.
This one's about as far as I can really go with Queensryche. Yeah. Like, Queensryche I've never really been big into. This is kind of the last album I can kind of enjoy from them. But from the earlier stuff is what I'm all about, the more traditional heavy metal Queensryche. Because, like, I mean, this one was definitely a highly influential album within progressive rock and progressive metal. But, I mean, I feel like this was kind of more of the big radio breakout album for them.
I'm kind of in the middle towards Queensryche nowadays because, on one hand, Jeff Tate's an asshole.
Oh, yeah, fuck that.
And on the other hand, like, the biggest song off this album is I Don't Believe in Love, which...
That's a total headbanger's ball hit.
Like, this is an album that's centered around a revolutionary uprising against a corrupt society, and you're going to spend 4 minutes talking about, oh, this love was never real. Like, come on, man.
Well, I mean, revolutionary doesn't really sell big on the radio in late 80s, so, I mean, like, they got to have something they can throw on MTV and...
Okay, it sounds like this has struck a nerve with you, Alex, so we should probably move on.
And yeah, now, except he's an asshole. Fuck him.
So now these next two ones, as someone whose tastes are generally more contemporaneous and eclectic, these next two ones please me greatly. So let's go with number 66, Deftones' White Pony, their third album that came out in 2000. And Deftones, okay, they may have started off as like your typical nu metal band, but there was definitely always something a little different about them from like their contemporaries at the time, like, you know, your Korns and your fucking Crazy Towns and whatnot. They were always just a little more abstract and esoteric in like their lyrical construction and occasionally a little bit in their songwriting. And of course, let's be honest, Around the Fur as an album is fucking untouchable. But this album was definitely where they sort of started to push into those more experimental bounds. Like, as soon as you hit like play, assuming you have like the good versions of the album that don't have that awful opening track Back to School on it, Faith Etcetera, just that really weird abstract experimental song that sort of tries to put you in the mindset of some kidnapped Brazilian girl. And, you know, you have sort of the weird trip-hop shoegaze elements of Digital Bath, the savage vocal, industrialized vocal delivery of Elite with just that really heavy-hitting riff. And just the whole thing was going into all kinds of weird territory, and probably, like, one of my personal favorites being the track Passenger, which, of course, features guest vocals from none other than professional procrastinator Maynard James Keenan of Tool. And, yeah, I would have to agree with this album as being one of the greatest of all time, because it's one of those that accomplished a seemingly impossible task. There's actually three other albums on this list that sort of do the same thing, but thanks to White Pony, for the briefest window of time, the nu metal genre actually looked like it had artistic integrity. Sorry, I just had to. And for number 65, one of those quintessential classics of the more weird end of 90s metal, Faith No More's Angel Dust.
Yeah! Angel Dust is killer. Now, some people might say, well, where's the real thing? Well, the real thing, in the grand scheme of things, is sort of an extension of their late or mid to late 80s funk style rock. But this is the album where Faith No More took a completely different direction, and my god, it was such a great direction. Mike Patton is a brilliant, insane genius.
There's no arguing with that on my end. Absolutely, you know, love that album to death. Love just the weird experimental. Again, this is another one of those albums that I got into because one song for this album in particular would just always play on Radio X and GTA. I told you, I never took the station off when playing that goddamn game. I'm amazed how much that influenced my music taste now that I think about it.
GTA had some really damn good songs in their radio shows every once in a while.
Absolutely. And now we veer back into industrial.
Oh, yes.
Take a pen out of something we brought up earlier. 64, Godflesh's debut album, Street Cleaner.
God, such a total nightmare of an album. Like, I remember, honestly, a friend summed it up best a while back talking about them. This is a band and an album that literally sounds like you are being dragged into the bowels of hell while listening to it. And I think that's really just the best way to describe Street Cleaner. It's just such a torturous sounding, sleazy sounding album. And I mean, like, GC Green's bass on this is just absolutely crushing. Then you have Justin Broderick, fresh off of Napalm Death, just like riffing it up with just total weirdness, and his vocals are just like totally demonic, but not in a really death or black metal way, just in his own unique, just evil sounding way. And it's just, this is such an intense album. I'm so glad to see Rolling Stone include this as one of the few industrial doom albums on the list.
Yeah, this is definitely one that really sells you on just like the innate horrors of just kind of like mechanization and industrialization, because there's always just something kind of innately kind of creepy about machines, just how soulless they are. And this really captures just kind of like the nightmarish sort of association you could kind of have with, you know, just machines and all that.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, and it's like, I'm pretty sure I also heard somewhere that the name Street Cleaner, Broderick actually got, it's a nickname given to, like, Uzi submachine guns, you know, like, that gangs would use to wipe each other out on the streets, which I think just even adds more to how badass this album is. Especially also the album artwork, which is a screen cap lifted directly out of Altered States, which just even further goes towards creating this nightmarish aura around the album.
Nanomachine, son.
And now for number 63, we have Sodom with their album Agent Orange.
Fuck yes! Absolutely! Yes! Sodom, I'm so happy that they are on this list, and I noticed that they're also the only one of the German thrash metal bands on this list. I'm so happy they picked Sodom. I'm so happy they picked Agent Orange. Such a perfect pick for this list.
And speaking of really good picks, we have number 62, the Sleep classic Jerusalem. One of their albums that, alongside the successor album Dope Smoker, was going in just the weird vein of creating one extremely long continuous track across like an entire hour or so.
That is just mind-blowing right there, that like band is capable of creating a release like that. It's one song that traverses an entire hour, yet they still manage to keep it interesting. You want to keep listening, and next thing you know, it's over, and you want to listen to it again. And I think Matt Pike perfectly pulls that off here.
Yeah, that's... I'm kind of amazed how one, like... I don't know if they were just, like, improvising it on the spot, or if there really was, like, a plan as they were writing it, but the fact that they were able to pull off, like, that kind of really lengthy, almost kind of like a musical stoner rock journey, basically, is... no small feat. And now moving on to another one of the more interesting ones on the list. Number 61, now that I think about it, probably the only metalcore album on the list, Converge's seminal classic Jane Doe. And this is definitely one I have to agree with. That's probably the only person here that actually does have a positive interest in the metalcore subgenre. And I mean, like, the... I guess I mean like the OG
no,
shit.
No, no.
Like, whoa, really?
Yeah, I do like some metalcore as well, and I also will very much agree with Converge being on this list.
Yeah, especially just how much like Jane Doe in particular stood out from the pack. Like, if you look at how metalcore, you know, its earlier days, like your Botches, your Coalesces, Shai Hulud, if you want to stretch the definition a bit, Miami's own Poison the Well.
Yeah.
Like, was kind of pulling on some of the same language. But Converge just put, especially with this album, just went in a completely different direction with a much mathier, deranged sense of songwriting. And, of course, Jacob Bannon's own, like, vocal style, which is literally just, like, consistently just barking things at you and never, you know, letting up. It's just a constant... assault, and it was so unlike anything else that the metalcore genre was doing at the time that it basically put them as arguably one of the most, if not the most important acts in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And hell, that album artwork alone became like basically the band's trademark, just that weird sort of like splatter painting of like a woman's face just staring apathetically at you. Yeah, there's really no other way to sum it up. It's just a good ass album.
And you know, one thing I'm actually kind of reminded of looking at that album is actually an album we were just discussing earlier, Pig Destroyer, Terrifier. Like, I can even kind of see a little bit of influence from Converge and Pig Destroyer in some extent.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, now it's bringing up. Yeah, I could totally imagine that. Moving on, number 60, Melvins with Bullhead. Yeah, Melvin's is one of those things I still really need to get around to. I mean, I saw them live once, and they're a pretty good live band.
With Napalm Death?
Yeah, that show. But as far as exploring their whole discography, there's just so much there. Heck, the only one I've ever really heard of was when a buddy of mine in high school lent me a copy of Houdini. So, yeah, Melvin's not really sure where I stand on them. I'd have to put in more work to check out their stuff. Now, for number 59... Speaking of Napalm Death, From Enslavement to Obliteration.
This is honestly, again, one of my favorite picks on this list, mainly because I feel like this is one of those more wild card picks on the list. Like, you know, when you think of Napalm Death, when the masses think of Napalm Death, I feel like everyone goes towards Harmony Corruption, the first album to feature Barney Greenway on vocals. You know, it has the big hits like Unfit Earth and Suffer the Children. But I feel like, and you know, Barney's still with him to this day. You know, that was the album that had Jesse Pintado fresh off of Terrorizer writing the riffs and playing guitar. And I feel like from that point on and for the rest of their career, you know, obviously people are going nuts for whatever they put out, but I feel like people started to kind of neglect that older Napalm Death, which is my personal favorite Napalm Death, and always will be my personal favorite lineup, which is the one that recorded this album. It's Lee Dorian on vocals, who would go on to form Cathedral and really kind of help push the boundaries of doom metal. Then you've got, obviously, Shane Embree on bass, who is still with Napalm Death to this day. But then you also have Bill Steer on guitar, who would later, this same year actually, go on to really help pioneer Gore Grind with Carcass. And then you have the legendary Mick Harris on drums, just beating the shit out of his kit like it owes him money. And I feel like, you know... Obviously, Scum is such a fucking monumental album for grindcore, but at the same time, you know, that album was recorded in two halves. There's quite a few people on that album, and this kind of core lineup of Harris, Dorian, Embree, and Steer is what recorded the second half of that album, which obviously sounds way grindier. But the first half kind of feels more of like an extreme Discharge album in a way, except with the more extreme drums. You know, it's more of that anarcho-punk sound. But I feel like From Enslavement to Obliteration, on the other hand, this is where Napalm Death really kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go in this way more extreme grindy direction. And I feel like this is a way more consistent album than Scum was a year before. And definitely, in my opinion, one of the most influential albums in grindcore. I don't even consider this one of the death metal releases on this album or on this list, because it just isn't death metal. You know, death metal is, it's characterized by having the riffing and kind of more like traditional song structure in a way, whereas Napalm Death on this album especially is literally just a fucking freight train spiraling out of control, about to fly off of the tracks and just destroy everything in sight. So to see Rolling Stone pick From Enslavement to Obliteration over an album like Scum, or an album like Harmony Corruption, or even further on, Utopia Banished, it just really gives me a warm feeling inside. I love that they picked this album.
Beautifully said, and I'm going to say, I can't add anything more other than this is another one of those situations where, just like Death, I'm surprised they managed to narrow it down to one.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, even if you were to restrict your choices to, let's say, those first five or so Napalm Death albums, they're just such great quintessential metal classics in their own right. How do you even pick?
Yeah, like, exactly.
What was the process here?
And honestly, it is a very tough pick, because, you know, Napalm Death is such a consistently good fucking band. And I feel like, you know, it's like, yeah, they kind of had their weird, kind of noisy-ish period in the late 90s, you know, there was the era where Barney wasn't in Napalm Death anymore, and he went over to Extreme Noise Terror. They kind of continued with that weirder, noisier shit. But then Barney came back in the 2000s, and they really kind of kicked it into high gear again with albums like Enemy of the Music Business and The Code is Red, Long Live the Code. And, you know, to this day, they're still going strong with this perfect death grind mix. But I feel like none of their albums since its release have been able to really recapture that just total chaotic, pissed off sound that Lee Dorian and company were able to achieve on From Enslavement to Obliteration.
Absolutely true. Now, number 58, Life of Agony, River Runs Red. I guess none of us have anything to say on that?
Nah, not really.
Yeah,
because the next few ones are definitely more interesting. So, number 57, Emperor, Anthems to the Welkin at Dusk.
I fully endorse them picking Anthems for this list, because, you know, obviously one of the big ones, obviously, is in the Nightside Eclipse. I mean, it's one of the most influential black metal albums of all time, because, you know, that's an album that kind of really started to kind of, you heard the more symphonic elements kind of leaking in with the keyboards and whatnot, and just that kind of mystical aura around them. But Anthems, I think, is the one where they really kind of nailed that sound down perfectly. And it's just so relentless, so ripping and devastating. So kudos to whoever picked Anthems over in the Nightside Eclipse for this list.
Now, anybody who knows me knows that, admittingly, me and the black metal genre don't really get along all that well, with pretty much the sole exception of Emperor. So any artist who can manage to get me to like a genre that I normally don't get along with has to be doing something absolutely right. So I will agree with any Emperor album. Anthems to the Welkin at Dusk is, you know, probably my favorite. And all I have to say is, God bless Eson, that absolutely magnificent bastard.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's just too bad we'll probably never see the Anthems album in its entirety performed in on U.S. soil, at least.
Now I'm sad. Anyway, number 56, another interesting one from one of my all-time favorite bands. The debut album from the Dillinger Escape Plan, Calculating Infinity. This was even before they had what would be considered sort of one of the more quintessential lineups. Like, this was when they had their original vocalist before a fucking Greg Pucciato joined. And it's definitely a much less, well, it's still crazy as hell in many of the songs, like Asterisk, Pound Signed Ellipses, or The Running Board, and of course classics like Sugar Coated Sour and 43% Burnt. This was definitely a much sort of rawer, more frenetic approach to the mathcore genre, you know, before they started getting more experimental and I guess more intricate with the actual songwriting. Like, this one felt more raw and sort of to the point. So kind of surprised they managed to go with this one instead of, I would figure, like, the one that came right after. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name, but yeah, the fact that they had any Dillinger in here at all was kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah, definitely a surprise for sure, and I'm a pleasant one at that. Like, you know, Dillinger's a band I've never really been a big listener of, but the little bit that I have heard, I do really dig. So to see them in some capacity on this list is definitely a pleasant surprise.
And now for an album and an artist that isn't surprising at all in the slightest, and absolutely should be here, number 55, Opeth, Blackwater Park.
Yeah, I'll let you guys discuss this one.
Okay, so Blackwater Park is kind of an important album in the time frame, not the time frame, but in the landscape of Opeth land, because that was the album that really shifted their styles to a more, I guess you could say, contemporaneous metal style. It was also the first album to feature collaborative efforts between Opeth frontman Michael Ackerfeldt and Stephen Wilson. of Porcupine Tree fame, because he was brought in as, I think it was a producer, and that was his first real metal album that he ever produced, which sort of led to Porcupine Tree having a shift in style on their albums In Absentia, Fear of a Blank Planet, etc., etc. And I can totally agree with them putting this album on here, because it was the changing of styles for Opeth, and it was kind of a, well, it was a groundbreaker for them. Although, personally, I probably would have gone with either Deliverance or, what's the name of that album? The one that has, Ghost Reveries, that's the one. I would have gone with either of those instead, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm kind of ashamed to admit this as someone who's supposed to be, like, you know, a prog snob myself, but it took a lot longer for me to get to the whole Opeth oeuvre than it probably should have, and it did take some, like, convincing from my guitarist. Not that I had anything against Opeth, but the guitarist from the first death metal band I was ever in, he was the one who was pushing me, like, okay, you gotta listen to Opeth, you gotta listen to Opeth, and I'm like, okay, and so I took a couple weeks or so to go through, like, their entire discography, and yeah, pretty much everything from Orchid up until Watershed are just, you know, for me, pure, like, prog metal classics. And yeah, if I had to pick the one that was definitely, like, I guess the strongest overall, it would definitely be, I guess, Blackwater Park, if we're going to pick one of just good music and also of relative significance.
Yeah, the post-Watershed stuff has been kind of divisive, I would say, like, Heritage, Pale Communion, and the new album Sorceress. It has more of the late 70s prog rock style, not so much the, you know, super doomy, you know, growling metal styles of, you know, Blackwater Park and Deliverance and Ghost Reveries. But that's just because Michael Akerfeld needs to preserve his melodious voice.
When it comes to Akerfeld, I'm just going to stick with Bloodbath, to be honest. Like, I've never really been big on Opeth, but I loved his vocals in that first Bloodbath album.
And now for number 54, an album that I absolutely am all about, Meantime, the second studio album from the band Helmet. Definitely one of those more interesting bands as far as 90s metal is concerned, because what I think when people sort of look at, like, the big metal trends of the 90s, everybody's always kind of thinking of the real mainstream emergence of death metal, fucking nu metal, and sort of like the beginnings of prog and also rap metal. But Meantime doesn't really fit into any one of those tangents. Like, it's definitely a metal album, but it also kind of fits in with, like, sort of the noise rock genre at the same time. Like, when you listen to songs like Give It, or my personal favorite track on the album, Turned Out, there's just this really, you know, heavy power chords and these often disjointed off-kilter rhythms. Just loud vocals kind of just shredding at you, almost kind of like you're listening to it in a live setting. And then, of course, there's that eternal classic of 90s metal singles, Unsung. That song, for me, again, GTA San Andreas, that song will always be untouchable to me. And yeah, I'm just kind of surprised, like, this one is really one that stands out from the pack when you look at the big view of just 90s metal as a whole. There was also, like, I think what helped it was that there was kind of, like, this moody apatheticness to it that if you were maybe, like, a grunge kid, but you were looking for something that hit a little harder than, you know, your Nirvanas or even your Alice in Chains's, Helmet would definitely be the thing that would do it for you. So, yeah, really solid pick. And for this next one, knowing Chris, I'm just going to let him have number 53.
Yeah, Typo Negative, Bloody Kisses. Like, you know, when it comes to Typo Negative, like, I honestly can't remember a band that grew on me so fucking quickly like Typo Negative did. I remember back when I first, in my junior year in college, I remember at that point, when it came to Peter Steele, all I ever really gave a fuck about was Carnivore. Because Carnivore is the shit. I love Carnivore. But Typo Negative I knew about, but I kind of had always just assumed it's like, oh, it's whiny fucking goth rock bullshit. Whatever, I don't care. But then I started dating my then girlfriend, and she's a huge Typo Negative fan. They're probably like her favorite band ever. And she showed me World Coming Down, And you know that it opens with just absolutely crushing white slavery, and that really caught me because, you know, I love me some good doom metal. And so when I'm like, wow, that's Typo Negative, and she's like, yeah. And so then I went and I checked out Slow, Deep, and Hard next, and that's their debut album, and that's the one that really clicked with me. And to this day, that's still my favorite Typo Negative, mainly because of how much it's pretty much just like a doom metal carnivore. But then the next one I listened to was Bloody Kisses, and I feel like this is the one that really, like I said, Slow, Deep, and Hard, and even the fake live album that came right after it, Origin of the Feces, really kind of pushed that doom metal carnivore sound, whereas Bloody Kisses is the one where it's like they really kind of depart from the carnivore aspects of the sound that they had on the first album and really just kind of came into their own. Like, this is what really established the Typo Negative sound. You know, you've got the real kind of gothic organs and keyboards over all over the place. You know, you've got the darkly grim lyrics in tracks like you got the big one, the one where he's making fun of goth girls, Black Number One, which obviously became the big radio hit. But then you've also got tracks like the opener, Christian Woman, and even the intro, where you've got this weird kind of feedback going on, and you hear this woman talking, and next thing you know, you start hearing her moaning as if she's in the throes of passion, and it's like, that's what they open the album with. It's like, holy fuck, I wouldn't want to be listening to this shit, like, with my fucking grandmother in the car. Like, it's just like, and then even going further on into the album, you have a fucking Seals and Crofts cover with Summer Breeze that actually sounds good. You know, one thing that Typo has always been good at is taking songs that are probably the farthest thing from metal you can imagine and really making them their own. Like, they did Seals and Crofts on this one. They do Cinnamon Girl. I forget who does Cinnamon Girl originally, but they do that one on October Rust. They do the Beatles on World Coming Down. And it's like, you know, the Seals and Croft one, though, I think is really kind of the one where it's like, yeah, this is no longer a Seals and Croft song. This is a Typo Negative song. And then, of course, you know, you have out tracks like much later on, the title track, Bloody Kisses, which is just an absolute masterpiece of just total heartbreak, suicidal-laden doom metal. You know, it's all about the love of his life killing herself, and he decides to kill himself to follow her. It's just such a darkly gothic contemporary song, and I feel like it's this album is definitely one of the big high points for Typo Negative. And not just for Typo, but this was also the first album on Roadrunner Records to actually go platinum. So, I mean, this really kind of set the bar for Roadrunner Records, who at that time, they also had bands like Sepultura, who was releasing Chaos AD and Arise. Actually, no, Chaos AD came out the same year as Bloody Kisses. You know, you also have Deicide really blowing the doors open with the whole Florida death metal thing with their first few albums. But Typo was the one that really kind of rose above everyone else, and it was with this album. And so, you know, I could kind of possibly make the argument maybe they could have also gone with October Rust over Bloody Kisses, because while Bloody Kisses really set the Typo sound, October Rust is really the one that really blew them out into the stratosphere in terms of popularity. But at the same time, it's just like what you said with death earlier. All death is good death. Well, all Typo is good Typo. So, I mean, I'm glad to see Bloody Kisses as the sole typo negative album on this list.
Rather excellently put, sir. Now for number 52, Def Leppard with Pyromania.
All right.
There has to be one.
I suppose so. I gotta be honest. Def Leppard's kind of a huge blank spot for me.
I kind of probably would have gone with High and Dry over this one, because this one's kind of where they started kind of going more in the hair metal direction. But, I mean, whatever. I mean, it was inevitable that Def Leppard was going to show up on this list at some point. So, whatever. Fine, I'll take Pyromania, I guess.
Now for number 51, a band that I recall Chris bringing up earlier at one point, Carcass with Heartwork.
And here we have our, I think, fourth death metal entry on the list, I think, so far. Yeah. Carcass, this is definitely an interesting one because, I mean, and also I think it's the best one to pick because, like Morbid Angel earlier, with Covenant, that being their big major label debut, this is the one where Carcass got their made, because this was in an era where Earache Records was selling off the rights to their bands and selling them to these bigger labels, you know, and it worked too. I mean, we got Morbid Angel putting Covenant out and Domination, and then you have Carcass putting out Heartwork. And while, yeah, the one that came after Heartwork was definitely a misstep, I mean, it's not a bad album. Swan Song isn't bad. Heartwork is definitely the big one in my eyes out of those two major label ones, because it just sounds so fucking fantastic. And I mean, this is the one where, you know, Carcass is interesting. This is a band that really went through a huge evolution in a very short period of time. I mean, they started off in the late 80s as a straight lo-fi, noisy, grungy, gore grind band with releases like Reek of Putrefaction and Symphonies of Sickness, which is my personal favorite. Symphonies is my favorite. But then Michael Amott joins the band on guitars in the late 80s, early 90s, and the very next album they put out is Necroticism. And that one kind of sheds the grindcore element of the band in favor of a more straightforward death metal sound, which is cool. I mean, I like the album. I don't hate it, but it's not my favorite from Carcass. But then Heartwork came next. And this is a total, like, if there's a 180 degree spectrum, Reek of Putrefaction is on one complete polar opposite end. Heartwork is the complete other end. And I really don't feel like there are many bands that can make this drastic of a change in such a little time frame and pull it off as well as Carcass did, because Heartwork absolutely rips. I mean, melodic death metal's never really been a big like a big thing for me. Like, I've never really been that big into it before, but Heartwork, I think, is one of the few albums that truly got it right. I mean, it's totally ripping and crushing and brutal, but at the same time, the melodies are just so beautiful and easy on the ears. It's just a perfect, perfect album, and I'm so happy to see them choose this for to represent Carcass. And not just represent Carcass, but kind of represent one of the last truly great albums from the classic Earache Records era.
Very, again, excellently well put. Thank you for listening to part one of this episode. Stay tuned for part two coming soon.